The following is a presentation of the Cold Slither Podcast Network.
Internet, do not attempt to adjust your internet. This is the Comic Book Chronicles. The voice you are hearing right now and seeing is not Tim DOWG, who is, as we speak, getting prepared for his pending nuptials. He may say he may join us in a few or sometime later, but I wanted to bring this up right now. Just in case it doesn't. All right. Enough of that. Anyway,
nice.
To get on with the show, I would like to introduce your host for the affair. Like I said, I am Roddy Cat. I am hosting this for you. You will be sorry that happened in a few minutes. But in the meantime, let me introduce to you the man behind the soundboards, the Apple in CBC Legal's eye, Agent underscore 70.
What's up, everybody?
And last but not least, we have the proprietor of the Pop Culture Network. We have the purveyor of the 6-second vines, even though that time limit has changed recently. We don't know what he's going to do about that. But PCN underscore Dirt.
Yay!
And gentlemen, we are here to chronicle some comic books. So let us get to doing that, shall we?
Yeah.
All right. But before I guess we get started, let's let everyone know that you can find us on the CSPN, the CSPN.us. You can shop our Redbubble, redbubble.com/people/CSPN.shop. You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and all points other places podcastery. Am I missing anything or not? I think that's about it.
Well, you can go to theclicknation.com to find previous episodes of the Click Nation's Comic Book Chronicles and Comic Book Reviews. You can go to popculturenetwork.com and visit the musings and the postings of the Pop Culture Network as curated by our own PCN underscore Dirt. You got anything else, Dirt?
You can go to theclicknation.com/live to always find a link to the weekly show.
Yes!
Watch the video stream there.
Right, but if you're here, you are probably either there or on YouTube page.
Nice.
All right. So, with that out of the way, I think, gentlemen, we would probably want to get the elephant out of the room. What do you say?
Okay, I'll leave.
Oh!
Oh, wait, what?
Badoomp. And badoomp. Yes. So this week we have a couple of notable issue books that have come out, and in addition to a whole bunch of news surrounding some books on the way. But we are now starting with our comic book news, reviews, and I think the one we need to go ahead and get out of the way is Civil War number three.
Yep.
Wow.
Yep. So, like Haley Joel Osment might say, we see dead people.
One of the worst kept secrets in the Marvel Universe.
Yep. Yeah. And it's a shame I rang the spoiler bell, because it is still worth, you know, somewhat protecting this, but the freaking Facebook feed and the internet just decided to spoil this before I could pick up my copy, even though we all knew it was going to happen.
As they do with everything, exactly. Like, I wish they would at least take one day, at least to say, hey, let the books get out there, and people who want to buy them on the first day, get out there and get to before you do it. But we are in the internet cycle of the news, and it's like, screw everybody.
Sure. I mean, it can barely hold itself down for a morning, and that's what what's most disappointing. Because right. at least here on the East Coast, not everyone is able to get their books until, let's say, at the very earliest 3 or 4 in the afternoon. Say they're getting out of work early or grabbing a late lunch or something. I generally don't have my books in hand until, let's say, 5:30 to 7:30. So, you know, I try to stay off social media, but this time I couldn't do it, and I got spoiled. It was very disappointing.
Yeah, and because I usually end up getting the news for the show, then and I'm surprised I actually wasn't spoiled. Like, I saw some articles that was, like, hinted around to some stuff, but I didn't actually get spoiled until I read it, like, late last night. So right. it was ridiculous to try to maneuver around that.
Right. So I guess what we can talk about is we kind of foreshadowed what was going to happen in this issue when we were speaking last week about the recent issues of the Totally Awesome Hulk,
mm-hmm.
and how that the most recent two-part story arc kind of brought Bruce Banner Hulk, you know, Bruce Banner specifically to a kind of new status quo and kind of made its peace with the character, and now we sort of see why they set that up.
Right. And part of that was slightly confusing because as all that was the case, we jump into this issue to where we find out that, as a matter of fact, I think this issue takes place right after Captain Marvel number 6, because I believe at the end of that issue, wait, that's not right. I can't remember. Well, actually, that might not be right. But we see Captain Marvel coming to see Bruce at the end right. of the issue somewhere, but I can't remember if that was right. that issue, or it might have been Civil War number 2, not
it might, it's. I think it's probably Civil War number 2, and they probably reenact it in one of the other tie-in issues.
Right, it got brought back up.
Exactly. What I was going to say is the hard thing to place is precisely how long it's been since the last issue of Totally Awesome Hulk.
Right.
That's the hard part.
The other thing is that this issue jumps ahead,
right.
Because we do shift forward in time, because we are getting basically a flashback story mm-hmm. telling us about the events in this book. So,
which it actually happens to be next week, by the way.
So, we're jumping probably several months ahead. Because
yeah. What I'm saying is, that part is true, but the events they're talking about are going to be happening next week, next Tuesday to be exact, is what I'm saying.
What is this Ulysses doing to our timeline?
I saw that date and I was like, oh, wait a minute. Yeah, so that's interesting. Which, granted, that could be anything. I thought that was funny that was that was for next week.
Right, exactly. I mean, I guess in terms of how it falls in real world time. So.
Right.
So I guess what you were getting at was, you know, what we have is this weird, it's a weird way of telling the story. We actually jump so far ahead, in fact, that we've had an investigation. We've had a trial set up. We've had witnesses lined up. We've had attorneys hired, presuming that we have had like trial briefs filed and read. So we're in a significant amount of time ahead.
All right. So Mr. Legal Guy here.
Yeah.
This is obviously something that can't happen in like a week.
No.
Right.
What this is a high profile case, but obviously it's the Marvel Universe. It's not going to take them 2 years to get to trial.
Right.
So if we think, what is the
minimum
fastest? Yeah, what's the fastest that realistically you could get to a trial?
6 to 8
months.
For a
high profile case.
For a criminal case, 6 to 8 months.
Okay.
Yeah, especially, I don't think that's going to hold. I think the timeline of the Marvel Universe is things are going to run a lot faster than that.
Right. Exactly.
They're going to say, like, well, 6 weeks ago when this happened.
Right. I mean, you could almost make the case of, like, this was such a high profile case that they just sped it up way, but even then that doesn't even hold water. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Right.
But again, this is comic timeline, so we kind of have to move past that one.
Right,
but yeah,
sure.
I don't know how weird the framing of it is, because you could think about it, this is kind of set up like a courtroom drama.
Yeah, sort of.
So I mean, this is like, you could see something like this on TV almost, you know, any given day.
Sure. So I'm going to ring the spoiler bell. Because I guess what we're going to touch on are some of the facts in the case and, you know, what parts of the story are told here in this issue, because as we've been saying, it's been told in flashback. It's told from the point of view of witnesses recounting what they saw on this date, specifically July 19th of a blank year. And, we sort of start off with Carol Danvers, Captain Marvel, confronting one Bruce Banner, and everything goes south from there. And that's where, you know, that's the crux of the story. But then we were surprised to find out that some of the wheels that were set in motion for, spoiler alert, Bruce Banner getting got were actually started by him, by, you know, they were his own plans.
Right.
Kind of a fail-safe plan.
And it still kind of stands the reasons why, okay, so he set the plan in motion, but when things came down to things, it still fell down to the judgment of the person who did the getting. So, you know what, we're probably going to go ahead and spoil the shit out of this. So let's just get it out of the way. If you haven't, you might want to turn this off and come back later.
Yeah, mute it, fast forward.
Yeah, give us probably a good 10 minutes, well, 5, 10 minutes, and then come back, something like that. So
go play some Pokemon Go or something.
If you're not already doing that.
Don't mind if I do.
Take a walk. Take a walk and come back.
So this is the trial of one Clint Barton, who is on trial for killing Bruce Banner by Bruce's own request. As we've just said, this is coming about, you know, during the course of the court case. We find this is from, we see testimony from not only him, but Carol Danvers, Henry McCoy, Beast, Tony Stark. I think that was about it. I can't remember if there was anybody else that got put on the stand that was surrounded us. But basically, all the flashbacks that we were getting were to the scene of what was happening, in that pretty much all of the Avengers and a whole bunch of Inhumans and a bunch of other people end up going to see Bruce Banner at his secret lab, which apparently is not so much a secret, because all these people know about it. And it started out real, well, not chill, but you see Carol going in there first. You see Tony going in there with him, talking about him, and he's starting to freak out because, like, he's thinking he's done something bad, which they're going by the fact that, hey, Ulysses, this human, has some vision of all of them getting killed by the Hulk, which apparently it's not going to come to pass now, or could actually still.
Right.
You know, because there is still another Hulk floating around, but it's just not the one they were thinking of. Which brings about a question for me, because apparently that's going to have to come up some kind of way. You know, that's, apparently I'm Daisy's going to be kind of pissed.
Oh, yeah, just a little. Just a bit.
Yeah. The weird thing about it is, I thought it was going to be a different Hulk that was dying. And
oh, yeah, because of the setup to the story in Civil War.
Exactly. And I figured, well, Bruce was going to end up finding out and then end up hooking out after not, you know, becoming a Hulk for a full year. Right. A full year without incident.
Right.
So anyway, so let's, so what else about this we want to talk about? That was pretty much the meat of the plot of this issue.
Well, I think what we start to see in this issue are some of the rifts in the Avengers team. I actually, you know, see some of the hints at the new Champions book.
Right.
That's been, you know, that's been announced. Other than that, yeah, you know, what we find out is that, you know, some of the, you know, some of the characters, especially Tony Stark, is, you know, finds himself almost in the Steve Rogers role from the first Civil War. So it's a pretty interesting turn of events. I'm still not a fan of Bendis's event writing. Mm. There's just something off about some of the characterization in these pages. I don't know how you felt about it, Dirk. But
is there someone in particular you're thinking of?
It just seemed like there's a couple of characters that just didn't sound correct to me, but it could have been just my, you know, general unhappiness with the story.
Okay, so well, let's get to talking about that. Which characters are we talking about? Because I know one for me was Hawkeye.
Well, I didn't think I never thought Bruce Banner would be talking like this.
True.
As depressing as he's been written sometimes, I never thought he'd be written like this.
Well, I think part of that was the reason why we've gotten a focus on him recently in Totally Awesome Hulk, because to me it made sense in the context of what they've done in the last couple issues there, where they have him saying, you know, Tony is coming up to him and basically saying, you're trying to start a problem here. You're trying to get into a fight with somebody. You still have anger issues that you're not dealing with. All of that kind of stuff. Once he has, you know, once Banner has this understanding that he really is doing this, that he does have this type of problem, then to me it kind of makes sense that he would start to make a contingency plan against it.
Right.
I got you.
But the thing was, and I guess we may or may not ever find out, is because, Bruce has been testing on himself. Like, we've seen kind of bits of this in Totally Awesome Hulk, where he was, you know, give himself some viruses or whatnot, and you know, but what we see here is he's experimented with, like, dead gamma particles or whatnot, and on using them on himself for, right, whatever reason that we don't know about right now. People are jumping, which I guess is logical given the case. People were thinking of, like, he's trying to give himself Hulk powers again.
Right.
Was the thing.
That's the implication.
Right.
Right. That's what's being implied, that he misses being the Hulk and he's trying to recreate his condition.
And if you read Totally Awesome Hulk from last week, you can kind of see it, but at the same time, I still don't get it. Why
we were doing that. Yeah, that's sort of why. I mean, that's sort of what I was getting at. It didn't sound right. Just coming off the heels of what we were just reading. You know, Totally Awesome. I mean, it was my click of the week.
Right.
Because I like the way they kind of wrapped up this nice little Bruce Banner centric story.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that's the problem I had with it.
Mm.
Are you saying that you think Greg Pak is a better writer than Bendis?
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, in some cases, I think that's true. Now, granted, there's another book I would say Bendis did pretty well that we'll talk about later on, but that's a totally separate thing.
Yeah.
But hey, I would pretty much agree with that. Actually.
Yeah, pretty much. I don't even have a sound effect for that. I'm just gonna let that one, you know, leave that one out there. You know, I don't want to walk all over that one.
Yeah. So, is there anything else about this issue that we want to bring up? Because there's something I wanted to ask that I wanted to bring back up before we move on.
I don't think so. How about you, Dirk?
No.
I got the variant cover. I got the Foul Cap and the Spidey variant cover.
Oh, nice.
Oh, the Cho variant.
Yeah, I guess. I didn't know that there was any. Oh, yeah, Cho and Davila. Yep, I got that variant. And I got the harder cardstock cover.
Yeah.
Nice.
Alrighty.
Okay, so the thing I wanted to bring up about this is something I brought up about a year ago, and we don't have to spend too much time with this because we keep on going, but do you think they're making a particular ish, do you think they're trying to get rid of certain characters for just kind of make this, to realize this now whole Marvel, now new Marvel that they've been touting for the last couple of years? Because think about it, we see what happened to Reed and Sue, we see what's happening to Bruce now. Professor X is gone. They're getting rid of certain characters who kind of, you know, Nick Fury's gone, or kind of gone.
He's off the board, really. Yes.
So do you think they're making some kind of particular statement with that? Now, granted, go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, I think they are, because with a book like Thor, mm-hmm. I can tell you as a retailer, every week almost, we have someone who will walk through the door and they'll want a copy of Thor. And they're like, no, not this Thor, the
Golden Sun Thor.
Yeah. Which, and you're just like,
we'll talk about that later. Yeah.
It's like, no, they don't do that right now. This is the Thor book they're doing. And people are like, oh, and they don't buy it. They're like, well, I'll just wait until it comes back.
Mm-hmm.
So I get the sense that on a certain level, there are characters that they're looking at that they're going, you know what, we can take this character out, get rid of them, and then when people come in and say, oh, well, I'll just wait for that character to come back, well, that character can't come back. Like, that character's gone. And, you know, you're going to have a certain amount of people that they just want the character that they grew up with. They don't care.
Right, that they know best.
Right.
And for certain books, you know, they've done some of these things like the season one hardcover specials that they were doing for a while. You know, they had the Ultimate Universe for a while, but now that's gone away. But now they keep bridging into the Cinematic Universe books, doing their own prequels and adaptations and sequels that fit in between certain points of the movies. And so it looks like they're branching out in this way where they can say, okay, if you want, you know, this classic character, then there's something for you. Go buy a graphic novel or, you know, one of these weird things. But as far as the mainline Marvel Universe, if we get rid of these characters and say this is who the character is now, then you don't have people saying, well, I'll just wait for them to come back, or I'll just wait for, you know, this, that, or whatever. It's like, okay, this is who Thor is now. If you want to read Thor, you have to buy this book, or there is no Thor, you know?
Right, because they're either outright pushing characters to somewhere else, or they're making duplicates, or they're having duplicate characters.
Right, and a lot of people, like for instance, you know, most recently with Sam Wilson, you know, a normal Captain America book sells 5 times what the Sam Wilson, you know, book does. And I mean, granted, they did a little I don't know if you want to call it haberdashery, whatever, to get you to buy the Steve Rogers book, so it gave it a little bit of an extra push.
A little bit of hoodwinking, you mean?
But a little, you know, generally speaking, though, people who come in, they go, oh, well, we want Captain America. Okay, well, this is Captain America. No, that's not Captain America. I'll just wait until the real one comes back, you know? Mm-hmm. So they've found themselves in this position where I think they do have to say, okay, we have to get rid of this character, we have to get rid of this character, and the only way to do it is to, you know, do something big so that people realize that they're actually gone and not just holding out for the book to return. Like, the Inhumans is actually selling really well now, because the X-books have been pushed, you know, so far off to the side.
Right.
That, you know, people are going, okay, well, this is basically the same thing, and the X-Men teams were always changing anyway, so it didn't really matter. You know, because people would come and pick up an X-Men book, and they go, well, where's Wolverine? Well, Wolverine's not in it. You know, okay, well, I picked up this copy of Uncanny X-Men, and I'm looking for Psylocke. Oh, Psylocke's not in that book, you know? So there's always been deals with that book where, you know, you were never getting the team, you're never getting the John Byrne, Chris Claremont team that you wanted.
Right, anyway. Or even the Jim Lee Claremont team that you wanted.
So, I mean, as far as that goes, that's a book that always had, you know, that rotating cast anyway. Mm. But, I mean, with some of these key characters, like, the people were coming in asking about Iron Man after the big announcement last week. And they're like, well, does this mean Tony Stark is going away? Well, I don't know. Was Tony Stark going to be dead? Yet. Well, I don't know yet. And right. For a lot of people, they go, well, you know, I get the Iron Man books, but if Tony Stark is gone, I'm not going to buy them anymore. And it's like, I can sympathize with that because they signed up for the books wanting Tony Stark Iron Man. And if you're going to say Tony Stark's not in the book anymore, then, I mean, they don't want it. So...
Well, and the funny part about that was, like, were these people actually buying the book, the Iron Man books, in the last few years when he's actually been around? So I get that reasoning, but that reasoning still is kind of crazy. It was like, well, clearly these books have been, you know, changing for some reason. And there's only so much you could do with Tony Stark, Iron Man, you know.
I was going to say, at the same time, though, you know, sometimes it's just an issue of bad timing.
I mean,
you know,
that's true.
That, you know, let's say their kid has just grown to the right age where they feel like it's appropriate to introduce them to a comic, or they're just discovering that there is a comic book store in their neighborhood as opposed to, you know, far away or having to do it by mail order. So, you know, there's all sorts of reasons for people to be walking back into the store, not just because, you know, they hear something in the news about a new character and they're turned off by the change in the character. You know, it's hard. I get what you're getting at, Roddy, but I can't completely think it's because, oh, you know, where were they? They should have been supporting the book to keep them from changing. Marvel doesn't work like that nowadays.
Right. No. That was not my implicit thought, but I'm just saying, but that is a thought.
These are not people who are walking in off the street, never having bought a comic before, saying, hey, what's going on with Iron Man? These are people that have been buying it probably since the first movie made him cool again, and they maybe stopped during that terrible series.
With the white suit.
When he was in outer space. And,
Superior.
Whatever. But, you know, maybe they stopped reading that one. But otherwise, these are people that have been, you know, reading Iron Man, you know, for years and years and years and years, that they're looking at it going, you know, if it changes, then they don't want it. Because a lot of them are also people who had been reading Thor.
Right.
And they just get to a point and they're like, well, I just don't really care about this character, you know, so I'm just going to stop buying Thor until they bring, you know, regular Thor back. So it's those, you know, same people.
Sure. Okay. Well, now that we've got that out of our systems, I think we can move on to some other books here. What you got? Anybody want to put up something? I guess we brought it up. Anybody want to tackle Vision?
Vision is awesome.
The thing about this issue for me is that we finally have gotten to the point where the Vision, so to speak, that Agatha Harkness saw of him attacking the Avengers, like, now it makes sense.
Oh, yeah.
And Vision himself doesn't seem like he's the villain in this mix.
Nope.
Right.
Which is reacting enough. As human, his reaction would tend to be as human as you would think it could be.
Right.
As human as it could be.
And the funny thing is, considering what all has happened in this series up till now, with the whole idea of what type of sacrifices parents will make for their children.
I'm glad you put it that way, because I was waiting for a moment to ring the spoiler bell. We're going to talk about what happens in the
book. Well, I was not going to be too explicit. I wasn't going to come right out and say what happened, but nonetheless, something happens with a child, and the setup that we've seen in this series is something that says, hey, if a parent sees something happen to a child, it's not good for anyone who happens to be anywhere near them. And that's precisely what happens right in the middle of this book.
Or we will see that as of next issue. Like, we see what actually happened to this child right. already, and then we see kind of going through the books of... Actually, during the course of the whole book, we see a whole another side story, which I thought was kind of interesting in itself, because apparently vibranium can be used as a drug.
Right, and I also didn't realize that vibranium lost its potency. Like, that must be a new twist, too.
Actually, that may have actually come up somewhere.
Oh, has it? Okay. I don't know where.
I want to say...
Wasn't there always some in Captain America's shield, or is that a new thing?
Well, no, yeah. That's always it's always been there. Yeah. It's always what the misconception, just very quickly before we go off on a tangent, the misconception always with Cap shield was that it was adamantium and vibranium, but that's wrong. It was always a steel alloy plus vibranium.
Right.
And that's what, you know, and it was that sort of begat adamantium trying to recreate something as strong as a steel and vibranium alloy. That's where adamantium basically emerged from. So, but ultimately, you know, yeah, Cap shield has been broken. Yeah, there was like an issue with the vibranium. Like if you remember in the 90s, there was like a couple molecules out of place because Cap missed a couple of pieces of his shield when he was rebuilding it during the first Secret War. And like Claw, he had to like absorb Claw to like realign the vibranium in the shield. So, right. You know, there was a whole storyline that Mark Waid did with that. But I don't recall ever reading that. This is like a new development for vibranium, but it could be explained well differently.
I say that because I remember the Black Panther storyline where all the vibranium has been spent. Now, granted, I didn't fully read it, so I don't know what exactly. So, as far as I know,
I thought the mound was destroyed.
That's what I'm saying. Wrong. But or either rendered useless. One of the two. I can't remember. I would have to go back and read that. But there's still vibranium out in space and other places, which I figured that would have been stored behind that. And people still seem to have some for some reason.
Sure.
But that said, yeah, we don't. I'm not sure if this is a new thing or not. But it just seemed like something that may have come out. Come up before because of what I just mentioned.
Right. I wanted to talk about the sad story that was also being told in this book as background. It's the story of Victor La Mancha, and you know, this was really, you know, there was some pretty solid storytelling here by as usual by Tom King, and the art by Gabriel Hernandez Walta was just killer in this. And some of the more emotive, some of the more expressive pages, literally someone calling out for their mommy. Mm-hmm. That was pretty, you know, those pages were tremendous and very effective and kind of heart-wrenching, you know, for androids, you know, to kind of evoke that kind of emotion.
Mm-hmm. Right. And the whole deal with what brought that character into being in that state and tying it into, like you said, the story with Victor La Mancha was kind of interesting. The thing that I found also interesting, which I need to find another word, was it seems like this could have been a parallel for what's going on in Secret Civil War, in a sense.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, because I had that same thought, that mm-hmm. all of this started because of a vision, again, pun intended, of something that was going to happen, and in order to stop it, a bunch of people decide to get in the middle of things, and because they get in the middle of things, it makes things worse, or mm-hmm. it may have been what the catalyst was.
Exactly.
To begin the whole thing. Yep. So yeah, I felt the same thing where I was like, this is telling a very similar story to Civil War, but in many ways a much better story than we were in Civil War.
I agree.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, this book continues to be great, and I'm sad that it's only going to be, what, 3 more issues or 4 more issues?
Is it going to 12 or 13?
It's going to 12, yeah.
Yeah, so 3.
Yeah, so, but this is a potential click of the week for me, and I am very curious to see how this plays out.
This was tremendous. This book was tremendous. I loved reading this. I actually read it twice. Just because I wanted to just kind of absorb the art and absorb some of the storytelling, because it is told so slowly. You know, like, you really are kind of drawn into the art. You are drawn into Victor La Mancha's story, because a lot of it is told from his point of view, and it's a lot of filling in some of his backstory. So, right. You know, I read it once during lunch. I read my review copy, and after I got home, I actually flipped through the paper copy.
And we still don't know who the narrator is. I don't believe
at this point. I don't.
It
doesn't matter.
Yeah. It might still be Agatha, but I get the feeling like it's someone else at this point. Yeah. I'm wondering. I guess not to throw out a spoiler necessarily, but a future book has been solicited that shows a character from here.
Yes.
Yeah, and I'm not going to mention who it is, but I'm wondering if it's that character. Yeah, or, you know, because with
that's them a good being, point.
Yeah, with them being synthoids, they do have the ability to come across as robotic sometimes, you know, so to speak. So I think there's the possibility that this book will end with the beginning of that future book, with the story being related to these other teammates or one of the teammates or whatever. And the idea is this book is going to help sell the other team book that's coming down the line, which may work, may not work, though, because it's a completely different type of storytelling. But I still kind of get the feeling like that's where that one's going.
Mm. Or it could be one other thing. It could be the child that we spoke of.
Right.
Because, I mean, that is a device that has been used in the past in places. So
Could be. All right. That's a good, I like this discussion about this book because I'm a huge fan.
I like this book.
Yeah,
huge fan of the book.
Mm-hmm. Like, since issue one, this book has just been hitting on all cylinders. So.
Yeah, for a book that I wasn't going to read, I only did because we happened to have extra copies sitting there that no one was buying. I'm glad I did.
Mm-hmm. Sure, and you know, obviously, we've all been keeping up with it now, so you know,
yeah.
I like to think that there's positive word of mouth spreading on this book.
Yeah, so as soon as you guys start reading Sheriff of Babylon,
hey, I've been trying to catch up. I just fell behind a little bit.
Yeah, I need to get on that. So, all right. So, what do we have next?
Let's see. Well, in terms of Marvel, I know Dirt and I are big fans of Web Warriors. Did you read this month's issue?
Yep.
So I don't recall actually reading number 8 because I found myself slightly lost, but I was able to catch up very quickly with what's going on.
Eight was the one where we saw the one thing that stands out in my mind is we saw the old toys where like the heroes and villains of the Marvel Universe turn into cars or airplanes or boats or whatever is the actual universe of the Marvel multiverse.
I remember you bringing this up. I don't recall. Actually, I'm going to have to go back and read it because I don't recall actually seeing that. But like I said, I was easily able to kind of figure out where we were. And I like that about this issue. You know, not every issue does that. Not every issue kind of sets the stage. We have literally, you know, this team of spider characters spread across the multiverse, but they summarize it very quickly in 2 pages, you know, right at the beginning of the issue.
Right.
So I understood completely where everything, you know, where everyone was, why they're there, and what's going on.
I love how, even at this point, when we know we're dealing with multiple universes where anything can happen, where a Dr. Octopus character from one of these multiverses can turn out to be a hero that joins the team, even in the middle of it, we can still be surprised by some of the characters, especially a longtime villain turns out to be a Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And their reaction to one of the other Spider-Man characters that we've come to know and love is less than complimentary.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it.
And so it's just reminds me of the creativity in this book, just how much fun this book is. Like, every issue is just a joy to keep reading because there is so much, I guess whimsy is a good way to put it. There's like a certain level of, it just doesn't take itself seriously.
Right.
But it takes itself seriously enough that the story has the gravity that it needs, but not too seriously that you can't have some good Spider-Ham jokes in the middle of it. You know.
Oh, there's a great one right in the middle of the book. Spider-Man Noir, Spider-Man India, and Spider-Ham find themselves teamed up, and it's this group of spider people that run into the Spider-Man that was whose secret identity is a very big surprise to all of us. Them, you know, and these characters in particular. You know, basically, and I'm going to quote Spider-Man Noir says, "Pavitr, I'm really starting to like you. Still not sold on you, pig." So I laughed out loud reading that on the train. So I thought,
well, especially the look on Spider-Man's face, just like, what? Me?
Yes. Mike Costa. Seriously, Mike Costa. If I could shake this guy's hand at New York Comic Con, I'll be happy to. I'm a huge fan of this book, and you know, this is just so well done.
I was going to say,
what else is there?
Oh, the sidetrack me.
I'm sorry. The last page also is a great bit of creativity. Like you thought you saw various incarnations of Spider-Man from across the multiverse. Page was still pretty creative.
Yeah, we got an introduction for a whole bunch more. And you know, this is one of those things where I can see that this book you know, we know this book is going to go away, but I could see them doing a special sometime next year with a bunch of shorts. Like maybe they'll throw together, they might call it an annual, or they might call it the Web Warriors, you know, 2017 special or something like that, where right. they would do a 64-page book where you got 8 pages of a different Spider-Man from somewhere in the multiverse. Because there's so much creativity going on in creating these characters, it'd be a shame if they all just disappear, you know, after this, because for whatever reason, people aren't buying one of the greatest Spider-Man books on the market.
It's true.
But, you know, to be fair, I almost didn't read it myself, you know. If my son was super interested in it, and I think that was the whole reason why I decided to take a look at it. And, you know, if it wasn't for that, I don't know that I ever would have picked it up myself. So,
right. I mean, I was looking for, you know, another, you know, I was looking for, you know, some of these characters, because I was one of the members of the panel that actually enjoyed Spider-Verse, and you know, I wanted to see where these characters were going to go, and obviously they stuck Spider-Ham and Spider-Gwen in, and I was on board at that point, so I wanted to see where that went, and I'm more than pleasantly surprised by this book. I mean, I enjoy this a lot. You know, our shows and our previous clicks of the week sometimes, you know, list this as a choice, so, you know, I'll be sad to see this go. Only 2 issues left. This is number 9, 10, and 11.
Yeah. Break out the black armbands.
Yep. All right. Let's see. What else? What else did you guys read? I guess we'll stick to Marvel real quick. Power Man and Iron Fist number 6.
Here we go.
All right. This was an actual candidate for Click of the Week for me. I had a blast reading this.
Mm-hmm. I did too. It is also a Civil War tie-in, as things happen.
Yes, it is. And it's funny is that it ties in to the extent that Danny and Luke actually see what's happening on television.
Exactly.
And you know, they're not at the front line of you know, of the heroes being recruited by Iron Man and or Captain Marvel. Actually, we start with the events that lead up to the events that are in Civil War Zero, and right. neither of these characters are recruited for that particular mission. And we see what happens. You know, we see a lot of this stuff sort of in flashback, seeing Luke and Danny's reactions to a lot of the stuff that's been happening.
Which I found kind of intriguing, because I was like, I don't think any of this was probably actually put anywhere, but the fact that they put it as the flashbacks kind of put the ties as they were to the last Civil War was, you know, were pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, both of these characters.
That was kind of weird.
Yeah, that was out of nowhere.
But what because I read that, and I was like, wait, is this in his mind, or did that actually happen?
Apparently it happened at some point, at some juncture. Roddy, you may want to tweak your audio. You're a little bit underwater.
I didn't know if that was just me.
No. Oh, crap. Just, you know, unplug, reset, all that stuff. Meanwhile, at the Hall of Justice, just very quickly, the there's some actual unfortunate real world parallels in Power Man and Iron Fist number 6. David F. Walker has, you know, kind of crafted a story here that that kind of draws upon some real world influences. Mm-hmm. And you know, some vigilantism taken to extremes by people with maybe not the best intentions. So it's a pretty interesting direction for the book. This is a good jumping on point for new readers, because it does in fact, you know, establish some of the character dynamics, and you know, lets you kind of fill in how or figure out how Power Man and Iron Fist fit into the Marvel Universe at large.
How do I sound?
Good so far.
Okay. Yeah, I thought this was the fact that they kept it street level, and the people that were coming to them were help, you know, were either relatives of bad guys, or in a couple of the cases, bad guys, right. low level bad guys. I was like, okay, that makes sense. And then, like you said, the real world stuff that kind of popped into it was like, well, okay, now we see how they're getting involved with this, and it makes sense. You know, it wasn't anything that was just arbitrarily thrown in. And if sure. we see at the end of this, hey, you know, one of the characters get carted off.
Yep, pretty much.
So I'm sure that will. The one thing I thought was going to happen though was like we see them. So we see them go see Carol and try to, you know, give their condolences about Rhodey and what happened. And also the flashbacks and whatnot. What I thought was going to happen was, after that conversation they had with each other, that they were going to go kind of behind each other and kind of go separate ways, but it turned out that wasn't the case, or is it?
Well, I mean, when we get to some of the announcements of the Marvel Now books, we may have to discuss that quickly.
Perhaps, yeah.
Alrighty. Any other Marvel books that we want to talk about? Because I got a rapid fire thing on Daredevil number 9. It's kind of like a cool throwback issue. It also fills in an important, or it doesn't fill it in, but what it does do is kind of talk more about the fact that the Marvel Universe at large no longer knows that Matt Murdock is Daredevil. And in, you know, the guest star in this issue, Spider-Man, you know, kind of talks about this as part of the story. You know, and basically Daredevil comes out and says the reason why you have an uneasiness about this is because of this particular piece of missing information that you knew at one point and now you don't. So, you know, at least that part kind of moved the story along. Otherwise, it's just kind of like an old school superhero team up. It's a lot of fun. I thought Charles Soule had some interesting interactions set up between the two characters. So if anyone is looking for something that's kind of a cool pairing off of these two characters, kind of an old school pairing off as well, pick this issue up. It was a pretty good read.
And you bring that up, that reminds me, because Matt did actually show up in Civil War number 3, and I totally forgot about the fact that, yeah, people don't know he's apparently don't know he's Daredevil now.
Right.
which makes it so odd that he's in the middle of this case.
Right.
Now that I think about it, that, you know, if he's just a nobody lawyer, again, working as a public defender...
No, he's an assistant DA now. He's a prosecutor.
Or assistant... Okay, well, if he's assistant DA, though, why would he be in the middle of that case?
He's prosecuting. But the thing is, I don't know if this is state court or federal court, but then we're getting way ahead of our stuff.
Yeah. Well, no, explain to us how the legal system works.
But in any event, moving on.
So, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, do you have anything else to add on this book?
Not on this book.
No, that's it.
Okay, well, I was going to say, there were the Civil War tie-ins.
Well, I actually did read the Hercules one, what was it called?
Gods of War.
Yeah, Gods of War. I did read that one.
Yeah, I read that one. I don't know that I enjoyed it as much as the first issue.
Right.
I think the first issue had more humor and more of the kind of... dealing with how out of touch and how out of place he is.
Right.
And this one...
This still had humor, but I think it's setting up the conflict.
Yeah, this was more, you know, now that he's found the people that do know him, that will interact with him, how that story is going to move forward, which is less... puts him less in a fish-out-of-water type scenario that it felt like he was in the middle of the first one. Right. But I thought it was funny that there's a reference to the other superheroes of the Marvel Universe coming to pay him a visit because they think he's going crazy because it looks like he's just thrashing around by himself in the middle of the city. And they say, you know, well, we'll get to Bruce Banner here in a minute, but let's go deal with Hercules first. Mm-hmm. So you do have this sense of where the story fits in the overall puzzle. So we know that in the main Civil War book now, we've apparently zoomed way past the story that's happening here with Hercules, but I still enjoyed it overall. It was at least entertaining, but not. I didn't feel like it was quite as much fun as what we got in the first issue.
Gotcha. Did you read the Spider-Man one?
I did.
I skimmed it. What did you think?
Well, first of all, the artwork was not as good.
Mm-hmm.
That's the first thing that popped into my head. Oh, wait, that's number one. Here's number two.
Yeah, hey.
let's see, as far as the story goes, similarly to what we talked about earlier, Spider-Man had got some information on someone possibly turning against him and...
from Ulysses.
Going back to their evil ways, yeah, and by getting involved in it and acting weird around the guy, he set the guy off and apparently set him on this course where he is going to turn evil and turn
self-fulfilling against him. Prophecy.
There we go.
There's a great line in that. I did read that part where I think Spidey says something along the lines of, "Did I just self-fulfilling prophecy myself?" Yeah. So, you know, I got a kick out of that.
I thought about that after the last issue. I was like, yeah, well, we'll see if that's going to happen. So,
I've never been very familiar with the Clash character, but I do like the setup with his parents and how they're the stereotypical, you know, their son's the boy genius and no one will give their son a fair shake and their son should be the millionaire in the middle of everything.
Like, they're sort of well off, but they're not, and, mm-hmm. you know, they're sort of... disappointed in their son when they really shouldn't be. I mean, other than the fact that he kind of went bad.
Like, they don't... But it's funny, because they don't seem to hold the fact that he was a villain against him.
Right.
They hold the fact that no one will give this former villain a chance, you know, to be a normal guy. And it's like, well, he, you know, he did put on a suit and, you know...
Do some bad things, right?
Yeah, so you, you kind of have to, you know, see the other perspective on that. But... It was entertaining, and I think that this works really well in playing off the whole, you know, does Ulysses actually see the future, or is he just seeing... Because some books have said he sees the future, and some books says he sees probabilities.
Right.
So it seems like the Marvel Universe editorial staff is not entirely on the same page of what exactly he's doing here. Right. But this does play into that whole idea of, if Ulysses sees it, does it have to come to pass, or is it a possible... Right. Outcome, which then goes to the core of, well, is it really right that they're going around locking these people up if it's a possible future? But, you know, that's the fun of the Civil War II concept with the character. So I've enjoyed this miniseries a lot more than I thought I would.
Cool.
I mean, it's not going to be click of the week or anything like
sure,
that.
Sure,
it definitely is. As far as, you know, tie-ins go to a major book, this does a very good job of bringing those themes to a, you know, particular character level, as opposed to everyone's fighting on Tuesday, what did this character do before he got in the fight type crossover that we usually see.
That's a good point. That's an excellent point, because that's often what we see with these crossover tie-in books, is that, you know, it's just sort of a day in the life, and then all of a sudden the battle starts.
Right.
Well, I think the only other Civil War tie-in that I have is Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but there's not really much to say about that one.
Was that out this week?
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Except for the very last page, right?
Well, no, actually, I mean, it does actually tie, and yeah, there, and that too, because... it starts out with them doing their stuff on you know, the stuff they would normally do in their book, or, and that a lot of that kind of plays into it until it gets to the point to where they are called in to go after Tony Stark, which means this goes after he kidnapped Ulysses. So they are tasked to bring him in, which doesn't go well, and also sets up the fact that they are now going to be, or at the very least, Coulson has chosen his side, let's just say, and he is also has a status change coming out of that, because apparently something he thought he did in secret was actually recorded, and yeah, what causes his status change, as we were
he gets busted for it.
Yes. So we will see.
Yeah, actually, I don't watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I have not been reading this series, but for whatever reason, I saw this one and thought, you know, I'm going to skim through this and see if any of this actually ties in. And I actually saw that ending, and it made me go, oh, well, you know what? For a comic based off a show that I don't watch, that I don't read, I kind of want to check out the next issue and see what happens.
Right, and I've been, like, I took a couple hours last night to catch up on to get to this point, just to see if there was going to be anything else that was kind of leading up to it, but the beginning of the part of the book is what it is, and that ties into what's been going on in their book, and then everything else just kind of goes into Secret War, so you actually didn't necessarily have to, unless you actually wanted to know what, you know, what that other stuff was about, so.
All right. Oh, I didn't read Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. this week. It sounds like I'm going to have to skim it.
Yeah, it's kind of worth it, I think. Like I said, just to get to see what happens at the end of it, but, you know, what
is going to come
out of that.
Yeah, I don't know if the lead up to it is necessarily great enough that the payoff, you know, is good enough for the story that's been going on, but jumping in at this point, skipping about halfway through the book and reading the back half of the book was definitely entertaining.
Right, and hey, that is the avenue to go. Let's see. Well, I got one other Marvel book if we're going to, well, actually I got two. But oh wait, that's right. New Avengers was a Civil War tie-in also. And this is, let's see what happened. Oh yeah. I don't know. This one was what it was. This is centered around.
I love it.
Yeah.
Hold on, where's the sound effect? Dang it.
Because there was, now, don't get me wrong, I like Al Ewens, and I love what he usually does with a book. And there's a part of the story which I guess is going to play out, so I'm going to let that be that. But part of this leading up to this has been kind of weird, because on one side you see S.H.I.E.L.D. was going after Bobby DaCosta and AIM, so that's kind of some stuff that's been going on. So John Garrett, who is he's this agent of S.H.I.E.L.D., but I guess he's kind of gone rogue a little bit and kind of taking matters into his own hand, has reprogrammed the Dum Dum Dugan LMDs to work for him, which brings us up to this issue, to where he interrogate would be the nice word for it. He pretty much grabs Songbird, and then it goes to the interrogator in the probably most final of ways. But then she manages to get a message out to, you know, Bobby and AIM, who sends a rescue squad after her, which consists of Cannonball, Power Man, and I can't remember who else was it. But it doesn't really matter, because at the end of this book, it all sets up to AIM's base being kind of deserted. The Maker kind of brings in his plot.
Ultimate Reed Richards.
Yes, Ultimate Reed Richards brings in his plot. Since everybody's kind of spread out, he goes in and takes his plan. And we see this one part where Pod and Dr. Tony Ho are, you know, having a moment, and then that gets broken up by the Maker's interests. And that's where the book pretty much ends, which actually could probably also, I think it's going to also set up a forthcoming book, or at least part of it is going to set up a forthcoming book.
Yeah, because I think so too.
Something happened with a couple of characters.
Yeah, we're going to be talking about that shortly.
Yes.
All right.
It wasn't that much of a Civil War tie-in outside of the fact that, you know.
Yeah, they see what's going on.
Yeah, S.H.I.E.L.D. was involved, and they knew what was going on. So
all right. How about any other non-Big Two books before we move on to DC?
Guardians was really good.
Okay.
With this week. And that would be, my last Marvel one. But yeah, the gang's all back together. There's this nice big battle and a bunch of jokes, as the Guardians tend to do. It was just a big fun, you know, hey, we're back together. Now we're taking care of the guys who, you know, who took them hostage and whatnot.
A poster-worthy cover by Art Adams.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. But what this seems to be leading into is, and we have been saying this a good bit this episode, is possibly a book that is coming down the line. Because what ends up happening is they pretty much clean up the Badoon and heads off the any future issues between the Guardians and the Badoon. I think we can safely say that, including one proclamation by Angela, which I'm thinking is going to come up in some sort of way, shape, or form. But then that's pretty much where the book ends.
All right.
So, but like I said, outside of that, it was just a big fun. Oh, well, actually, I'll take it back, because it's actually the next issue is going to lead them into Civil War, because Carol Danvers kind of shows up on their Hollow
Vision. Right, I was about to say, this is going to be a very direct tie-in.
Yeah, so, and that's where they're going to come into the Civil War fold. But outside of that, it just seems to be, hey, this is wrapping up the stuff they've been doing. It could be setting up something for a future. At least that's what it seems like.
All right.
Then they're going into Civil War.
That's okay.
All right. I've got a non-Marvel, non-DC to jump to, and that would be Voltron Legendary Defender number 1.
Yes,
this is based off the Netflix series.
Okay.
Yes.
And it's a book that the artwork, first of all, is really good. Mm-hmm. It has that anime style running through it. Looks just beautifully colored. The artwork is really nice.
Like, but you can pretty much say this is coming off of this is pretty much the same art as the show.
Yeah, it does. It does look like it's at least very close to the same style guide that they're mm-hmm. working off of. And the story is written, it's one of those stories that works on two levels, where you do have a lot of jokes and clips and things that come along quickly, so a younger reader will be entertained, but then at the same time, there's a bigger arcing story that's going on that satisfies an older reader to give them an actual plot to follow as they go through. So I think if you've got a younger kid who's, you know, 6, 7, 8 years old that really likes watching the cartoon show, they'll enjoy it.
Or if you're older like Voltron.
Yeah, well, if you're older like me, and you've grown up with Voltron almost your whole life, then you do have this great story. You know, Voltron did take a pretty big turn. They completely reimagined it as part of this series on Netflix. There's a lot of changes from the original, which I didn't think I was going to like, and I ended up liking a lot of it. So,
same here.
So yeah, this is, if you've enjoyed that series at all, even if maybe you've only watched like the first movie, you know, that two-part episode thing that set it up, you're still going to be fine. You're not going to, you know, you've got enough information that you can follow the story. You don't have to have seen the entire season to know what's going on with this.
Right, even though this does take place after, well, in between an episode, but you really don't have to even know about what happened in that episode to kind of go into this.
And it does play on, you've got that classic twist where the heroes rush in and try to fix something and save somebody, and it turns out that they end up break something, and they may have actually done something very bad. So, one of those classic twists that you get. And so it's a lot of fun. It's definitely worth a read. And like I said, if you're, it doesn't matter if you're older or if you're buying this for a kid, it's going to work on both levels. The artwork's beautiful, so it's definitely something that people need to take notice of.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think. Well, there was another book. Where is that at? It was also from Lion's Forge that came out this week.
Night Trap one. Number 2?
That's the one, actually. I was going to bring that up.
Oh, that is
Okay, if
I'm just looking at Comics List, so
yeah.
Right.
If you're at all familiar with Night Trap, you know it was this horrible full motion video game that came out in the mid 90s. It's the reason why we've got ratings on video games nowadays. This plays off the idea of horror, but it doesn't necessarily tie into the storyline from that. But what it is your classic 80s slasher movie type deal, where you've got these people going to a cabin secluded in the woods. And there's this notorious serial killer on the loose, and he's running from the police, and he ends up hiding out in the same area where all these teenagers are going to hang out at this cabin to party and have fun. So nothing particularly groundbreaking in what you're going to be reading here. They're not, you know, charting a new course or uncovering any new plot devices, really. But as far as seeing that classic 80s slasher being brought back, and it's one of those where it kind of makes fun of itself, but at the same time, it does try to build up some tension and it gives you some gore. So it is a lot of fun. So anybody who's a fan of those 80s slashers movies is definitely worth checking out.
Any tie to the actual game, like Dana Play-Doh or any FMG type?
Just because, you know, the original was that house full of girls being stalked by vampires. You just have this house full of girls and a couple of their boyfriends who show up and they're being stalked by this killer. But that's really it.
Gotcha.
You do have a subplot with the police, or I guess they're FBI agents, whatever, trying to track down this killer. So you do have a little bit of that going on. But, you know, for the most part, it's just that classic. If you remember, they did Friday the 13th comics from Wildstorm and Avatar about 10 years ago, I guess. This is, you know, just kind of follows that same basic idea of you introduce these characters, they show up someplace, and they start getting picked off, you know.
Gotcha.
Okay, so what about, anybody else have anything?
Let's jump into DC.
Yeah.
All right, what'd you read?
Because there's a couple of big books out this week that I actually had a good time reading. The first one I wanted to talk about is the Asian brother who is now a new Superman. That's a new Superman number one. This is actually a very interesting read. What did you think about it, Dirt, before I go into it?
I felt like they mishandled the main character.
Did it feel like their version of turning him into a Peter Parker, like a modern Peter Parker?
Well, I could see the argument for that, but the problem, I think Doomed did a better job of trying to do that, though that book failed.
Sure.
But my problem was that this character isn't very likable.
Right.
He's actually To turn a French phrase, he's kind of a dick.
Yeah, and, pretty much. He's kind of a bully, and that's the weird part.
So you don't like this guy, and the only, the only redemption they give for the characters, they say that, well, his mother died in this airline crash, and so therefore he blames the son of a guy who works for the airline.
Right, he's acting out, you know, towards, but, you know, who he thinks is responsible.
Right, but even then, he's still a dick.
And yeah, pretty much.
He's also, he's trying way too hard to act cool around girls, and, you know, you get all of that kind of stuff in there. So it just really came across like, I don't like this guy, and they're going to make him to be the new, Superman in this Chinese team, which it's an interesting premise, but I don't like the guy. Like, they're going to have to do something big in order to get me to want to read more of his adventures, because the way it stands right now, I'm like, I kind of hope he dies and someone else takes his place.
So I'll give you my thoughts on this. I agree with you. You know, the kid's kind of a schmuck. But I did think, I could see that this was kind of a Peter Parker story with a twist. It's not a Clark Kent story. You know, it's not the Chinese Clark Kent. This is much more a Peter Parker type story, because it's a kid who's not born with powers, who ultimately gains powers through some sort of experimentation.
Right.
So, you know, it's him reacting to these powers, and we meet him pre-powers, and we see that, you know, he's kind of formed by, you know, a death in the family. He's formed by his social interactions that are kind of not healthy. We'll put it that way. That's the mildest way you can put it. And his father's kind of detached because, you know, he's a political junkie slash conspiracy theorist. So, you know, there's, like I said, there's a lot of Marvel origin types aspects to this guy's story, and he's a schmuck. So, you know, it's also kind of the Deadpoolization of some of these characters too. You know, like they want you to kind of want to make them smart. You know, you already swore on the show. They're trying to make them all wise asses. You know, so
yeah. So
you know what I mean? So
I'm not completely sold on this character. They're gonna have to do a lot more with him to make me want to continue with his adventures. It is a new book, and it is part of a new, you know, push, whatever, so I'll at least give it a couple issues. I'm not, like, you know, throwing it away in disgust, and I'm never going to read this again or anything like that, but the way it stands right now, it's just not looking good in the long term.
Right. Honestly, I had a slightly different experience until I got to the last cliffhanger page. When I saw the last cliffhanger page, and I saw that, you know, literally it's almost a play on you know, made in China, that I wanted to throw whatever it was I was holding. It might have been my tablet. When I saw that, I wanted to throw something because
are you talking about the other people who show up?
Yes, the made. Okay. When I say it's a play on quote made in China.
Okay, well, because that's something that they actually
promoted leaked. Before. Yeah. Exactly.
Right. So,
but I'm obviously not as attentive to DC news on a regular basis. So, you know, I was kind of hoping to give this a nice clean slate. So I didn't really know about that. I sort of knew about that. But then when I saw it in reality and in execution, I literally wanted to throw something because, you know, it was just silly.
Yeah. Yeah. So not the best debut of a new character we've seen.
Yep. We can get to one of the books that one of our regular co-hosts, Tim DOGG98, liked a lot this week, and that book is Nightwing Rebirth number 1.
It was good.
Did you read it, Dirt?
I did. I have not kept up with Grayson. Mm-hmm. I didn't really care much for that series. I like the Nightwing character in general, but this book is a lot of, if you read the last series, it wants to kind of put a bow on everything that was in that series. Yeah. It's not really written so much as an introduction to the new series, as much as an ending to the last series.
And kind of wrapping up that phase of the character.
And showing you everybody else that he interacted with during that series, like what's happening to them or, you know, where they're all at. So you did get a Batman appearance, and Damian was woven throughout the story, but it was really there to show you what happens with Huntress and what happens with Midnighter and what happens with the rest of his team at Spiral and all of those people. So it didn't feel very rewarding for me as someone who didn't read Grayson. But if you're someone who, you know, read Grayson and you're not sure if you want to pick up Nightwing, you probably still want this because this feels much more connected to that series. But I don't know if you're someone who hasn't been reading it and you're interested in getting in on it now that he's turning back to Nightwing, you probably just want to wait for the regular Nightwing 1 and not worry so much about this special.
Right. I'm inclined to agree, but I liked it because it did that, because it tied a bow on the Grayson phase of this character's history. You know, the whole super spy, Spiral, agent of Spiral, Agent 37, phase of his career. I liked it for that specific reason, that it did kind of reset reset the character. It placed all these supporting characters that, yeah, I haven't been reading Grayson, but I sort of understood that these characters played a role in that story, and it's nice to see that, yeah, we know where they are when they reappear, you know, before they reappear in the regular Nightwing book. So, you know, I liked it for that. I liked that it was kind of an internal journey. I liked that there is a callback, a reference to an old Wolfman Perez New Teen Titans issue, you know, the first appearance of Nightwing, where he does relay the origin of the name. And it's
right.
I remember the comic exactly. And, you know, it is a reference to a Superman, to something from Superman, not from
Batman. It was a story in like the 60s or 70s where they dealt with the superheroes on Krypton. It was Flamebird and Nightwing, and they actually brought him back maybe in 52.
Oh, in New 52?
No,
oh,
no.
52, not, I gotcha.
That weekly series that ran for a whole year. I think they may have been in there. So, but anyway, nonetheless, I do like the fact that they kept that aspect of it and didn't make it as it was some sort of I thought for sure they would rebrand it as well, that was the concept from Batman.
Yeah.
Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. So, no, I like that part. But, I mean, you know, I understand where Tim is coming from. He was reading Grayson, so I can see why he would like this book a lot this week. Roddy, did you have anything else to say about it before we move to, I think, the other DC book I read this week?
Yeah, no, not really. I think you pretty much wrapped it up. And, like, I'm kind of coming from a place where I started reading Grayson and I did like it. I just didn't keep up with it and kind of been bits and pieces of it here and there. But, yeah, between this and Grayson Annual number one, or whatever number it was, excuse me, did seem like they were kind of wrapping up things to get, you know, Dick where
back
he is
to
now.
This, right. Mm-hmm. So what I wanted to talk about next was Action Comics number 959. Dirt, I'm presuming you read this.
Yes.
Okay. So this brought back a lot of memories for me. You know, very 90s, very, you know, kind of taking me way back in the time machine to a certain period in all our lives when, you know, everyone was rushing out to be a comic book speculator.
Yeah.
You know, and we get this weird retelling of the death of Superman from the point of view of Lois Lane and from the point of view of Superman kind of revisiting that, you know, that story in his life.
And now we see how his son is going to deal with facing this type of threat and seeing his dad. You know, this is what's going to push him, you know, presumably this is what pushes him to become a full-fledged hero. In the upcoming series that we know he's going to get. But this series is so ridiculous. And I say that.
I mean, like, part of me is, honestly, Dirt, hold that thought. I didn't want to get into the fact that I don't know if I was comfortable with the flashback, you know, with the way that the story was being told, but go on.
Well, I was just going to say, like, it's ridiculous, but it's ridiculous in the most fun way. Where this is something I said after the first issue came out, and it still holds. They're, like, just throwing everything at you at once.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's part of, like, hey, we got to clean all of this stuff out of our system so we get, you know, kind of a fresh start in the future, or if this is just going to be the new status quo of, hey, it's just nonstop, you know, balls-to-the-wall action. You know, as the title says, like, we're just going to, you know, the craziest amount of over-the-top stuff we can throw at you is what we're going to do, but that's what they're doing here right now, and it is bizarre mm-hmm. and fantastic. Like, you cannot take it too seriously, which is part of the fun of it, and I think part of the, like, what makes it so enjoyable is that you can't get upset about any of this. Like, a lot of people I know, when they saw that it was going to be Doomsday, they were like, oh my gosh, Doomsday, we're going down this road again. How can they, you know, re-bring this character out? But they're bringing back everything.
Right.
We have another character from the pre-New 52 era, the pre-Flashpoint era, the pre, like, a character that goes back to that 90s speculation era again, re-emerging. At the end of this book, and you know, again, it's like, as much as you want to say, oh, I can't believe they're bringing them back and they're cashing in on people's nostalgia for that era by putting the character there, it just feels like it's so much more than that, because they are just throwing everything that they possibly can
right.
at you, that it's just, it's bizarre.
What character is that you're referencing, Dirt?
The guy who shows up in the very last page he's wearing the glasses. He's got all the energy crackling around him. He's the Eradicator. He was one of the four Supermen who appeared after the death of Superman.
The last page.
I think wasn't it the last page? I thought it was towards the end, right?
We're talking about the same book?
Wait, hold on. Was there another Superman book that came out this week? No, I'm pretty sure it was this one. All right, now I'm going to have to pull it up.
Yeah, see, now I'm flipping through. I'm just like, what you talking about, Willis? I'm literally flipping through it right now. I'm like, what are you talking about?
Like, I didn't read something in advance coming out that I'm like, uh-oh, did I just spoil something? That
yeah, seriously, I'm just like, Dirt, what are you talking about, man?
Anyway, hold on. No, this has got to be, let's see. I'm going to pull this up.
I think you're talking about Superman number 3 that's coming out next week.
No, wait. Let me go. Here. Oh, yeah, it's not the last page of this.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, but I just skimmed through this and...
Oh, yeah, I'm thinking of a different book.
Never mind.
Yeah, exactly. I think that was a new Superman, I think.
Was that the end of New Superman?
I think it's New Superman. I think Eradicator shows up. We just spoiled that. Damn it, I didn't get to the bell. I think it's at the end of New Superman number 1 where Eradicator appears. Now I'm going to flip to that and see.
No, that's Batman's...
Oh, no, you're right. No, but I think Eradicator is before the end of the end of the book. Yeah, because the Made in China, Batman and Wonder Woman, there it is. I just spoiled it.
Well, okay, wait, he appeared somewhere in the DC Universe this week.
Yeah, I remember seeing it.
But where the heck was that?
Oh, damn you, Eradicator.
All right, well, hey, everybody. Eradicator
in the DC Universe. Oh, I love it. I love it.
It wasn't Flash. It wasn't Wonder Woman.
Wasn't Green Lantern or Kent Lanacore?
No, it,
which it wouldn't wasn't make much Hal sense, Jordan. But,
yeah. Oh, my gosh. Was it,
I remember seeing it, too.
Maybe that was last week. Did he show up in something last week?
I don't know.
He's showing up in you guys' minds. That's what's going on here.
we're having the same hallucination.
Like, wait, maybe it was the end of Superman 2. Was it the end of Superman 2? Yeah, okay, it was the end of Superman 2 last week.
Oh, okay.
Okay, right. Not Action Comics this week. All right.
There you go.
All
right.
Third base. Gotcha.
I knew it had to happen somewhere. I didn't imagine it.
And I knew what you were talking about too. So
okay. Action was just it was the Clark Kent thing. That was the Clark Kent action this week was Clark Kent thing. Here's the weird thing about the Clark Kent character is he makes the comment of he says something like the way you saved me a couple weeks ago. And Superman has no idea what this guy's talking about. Like, what do you mean, saved me a couple weeks ago? And it took me a minute to make the connection, but I think I figured out who this Clark Kent is. And it's another character from the old DC Universe. There was a storyline in the mid-90s where Superman actually went to a parallel universe where Zod and his two generals, the lady and the big dude from Superman 2. I can never remember the other two's name. Zod and the other two guys. Anyway, they destroyed the entire Earth. Like, they killed every single person on Earth. And the only person who survived was a being created by Alexander Luthor, who was the last hero of this Earth. And it was a character known as the Matrix. And the Matrix was a shapeshifter. And she eventually became Supergirl in a Supergirl series in the late 90s. But for a long time in the Superman books, she was Clark Kent. She shape-changed and became Clark Kent. And then suddenly, all of the people who were in the, I know who you are. I know that Clark Kent is Superman. I know your secret identity. Suddenly, Superman and Clark Kent are showing up in the same place at the same time everywhere. And what we've seen with this Clark Kent is this Clark Kent doesn't have any thoughts of being Superman, doesn't want to become Superman, is not, you know, I'm the real Superman, you're the fake Superman, whatever. This Clark Kent is like, I'm Clark Kent. That's just who I am. You have to save me, you know, blah, 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 blah. I'm wondering if this Clark Kent running around in Action Comics is that Matrix character from the old DC Universe who has reemerged now that we're seeing all these characters come back. So that's the 90s reference in Action Comics this week that I think is coming. I think it's that shape-changing character that played the part of Clark Kent for several, I think it was a couple years, maybe, in the Superman books in the mid-90s.
Okay.
So that's I'm going to put $5 on that. betting in Vegas.
I am not. That's a sucker bet.
Okay, so that's my 90s character reemergence.
There you go.
Okay. We got it out of the way. So, Kevin, you got the DC books you want to go through?
We're losing you, Roddy.
Sure.
Roddy, while you fix the while you come back from underwater, do you guys want to do clicks of the week now?
Well, I mean, I can do a couple other DC books real quick.
Okay, go for it.
If you didn't read anything else.
No, I covered the three I got.
Okay. Well, let's see here. Alphabetically, let me scroll through my books here. We had Flash that came out this week. Flash, once Wally West reappeared in the special, Flash has suddenly been reminded of how many speedsters there used to be. And while he's reminiscing about this fact, it just so happens that another detective gets struck by lightning with a whole bunch of the chemicals in the Speed Force, and suddenly he becomes another speedster. And so as Flash is sitting there going, oh, wow, I guess there's something weird going on surrounding me because I was thinking about the fact that there used to be so many speedsters, and now there's another speedster, and suddenly in this book there's an explosion of speedsters. A Speed Force storm appears, and people all over town are getting struck by lightning, and you're seeing these streaks all over the city. So now Flash is going from being the only speedster in the New 52 to being reminded of Wally West in the pre-New 52 universe to now suddenly this detective to now suddenly dozens of people around Central City are now running around as speedsters. So you have this explosion of speedsters and the explosion of the Speed Force back here in this universe. So, you know, it's kind of a fun throwback, and I'm looking forward to seeing how this plays out. The artwork is beautiful. This is the D.G.A. Dunkdominio. I don't know how you say that. I said that totally wrong. Guy who did Spider-Man quite a bit a long time ago. Very good artwork. Beautiful artwork. The story is a lot of fun. Playing with the Speed Force and playing with all of this stuff and how Flash always seems to be in the middle of these you know, big storylines. The way Flash was in the middle of Crisis and the way Flash was in the middle of Zero Hour and he's in the middle of Flashpoint and you know, all that kind of stuff. So they're having a lot of fun playing with that, and it's been really enjoyable. We've got Detective Comics, which
Hold on, I got the name. Oh. Carmine DiGiadomenico.
Yeah.
He's a Paisan.
Say that three times real fast.
Carmine, hold on, I'm pulling it back up. Carmine DiGiadomenico. Carmine DiGiadomenico. Carmine DiGiadomenico.
Yeah, faster than that. Come on.
And now he disappeared behind you, so.
That's funny.
Detective is just not doing it for me. They've put together this team. Every member on this team has secretly been tracked by this group that Batman doesn't know who they are. He just knows, he's just seen them around Gotham, knows they've been tracking everybody. So that's why he picked these people to be on this team, but he doesn't know what the connection is between everybody. Batman is attacked and apparently beaten. And so Batwoman, who's unsure of herself and is not sure that she should be leader, calls in her dad to come help him out. And it turns out that someone within their midst is a traitor and is actually working for this team and wants to take them apart, build their own military unit based off of Batman. And, you know, I don't know. It's kind of convoluted to the point where it's, you know, there's a lot going on with no subplots leading to this point where it's just suddenly all this stuff is dropping in everybody's lap. And I don't know. I'm just not enjoying the team dynamic. And we're just at the point now where everybody's in peril, apparently, but they could very easily get out of it. But because of their stubborn ways, they won't. And I kind of don't care at this point what's going to happen to a lot of them. So they've done a very poor job God, I can't think of the word. You want to sympathize with them, but they're not sympathetic characters in this whole situation. So I don't know. I'm hoping this is just an arc that'll end like in six issues or whatever, and they can move on to something else. But if it keeps going much longer than that, I don't know if I'm going to keep reading this book. I just don't really like how things are playing out. I don't really care what's going on with a lot of these characters. And then I did read the Hal Jordan, if I can find that real quick.
Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps Rebirth, number one.
One of the longest titles in comics to come across in a long time. This does the same thing, basically, as the Nightwing Rebirth. It puts a cap on the old series and sets him up for what his future series is going to be. So if you read that old the Green Lantern series that came before with Hal Jordan, this is going to explain everything. He explains everything that happened, why he made all the decisions that he did. But one of the key things, if you remember Agent 70, when they did kind of a soft relaunch with the characters after Convergence, and Green Lantern was suddenly wearing a trench coat and he had the long hair and and we couldn't figure out what the heck was going on, and everybody explained it. This actually explains what that was all about.
Oh my gosh.
And I'm reading it going, why didn't you explain it this way when it happened?
They didn't know how to explain it back then.
It makes perfect sense now. After reading this, I'm like, oh, okay, well, now I get it.
That version showed up recently, right?
Which
version? That version that you're speaking of, the version of Hal Jordan with the trench coat, didn't they do something with that, like, fairly recently? Or maybe I'm delusional. I don't know.
Well, it was after Convergence when they introduced him, so it was only a year ago, or...
Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, it wasn't even something that happened that long ago, but they've explained it in such a way now that as someone who wasn't reading the books, you know, month after month after month in the DC Universe, when I picked it up, I was like, okay, well, I'm going to jump on this now that the status quo has changed. let's see what happened, and I couldn't follow it. I had no idea what was going on. Well, now reading this special, oh, it explains exactly what was going on. And if they had done that back when the changes were made, I think it would have done a whole lot better. But that's done. It's over. He's back to being a regular Green Lantern, and now he's got to track down what's happened to the rest of the Green Lantern Corps. And the Green Lantern Corps being lost was their whole miniseries from last year of explaining that they were in some other universe that was dying and collapsing, and they had to escape before they were wiped out of existence. So those two are going to merge together, and thus you get Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps. So it's interesting in the way that it ties that up, but again, it's one of those books where if you haven't read the last series, you don't need to read this. This is more of a putting a cap on that last series, and then when you go forward with the new series, you can just pick up the number one that's going to come. You don't have to worry about this special. So in the long run, this special doesn't really matter unless, you know, you've been reading Green Lantern for the last, you know, 3 years or whatever.
Sure. All right.
So as a side note, I'm just flipping through this book. I want to say a shout out to Matt Wayne 97 who's watching, because he and I was just having a conversation like this morning or yesterday, I can't remember, about Green Lanterns and the rings and whatnot. Or it wasn't so much of a conversation, just brought us a couple of things. So
cool.
Going through just kind of reminded me of that conversation.
All right.
So are we...
Do you have any other books?
Yeah.
All right, you want to talk about Powerpuff Girls?
Nay. Nay. Clicks of the week. Click of the week.
Yes, let's get there.
_70 on Twitter. I called it earlier. I did not wait to spoil. I did not. Yeah, that's right. Dirt is putting it up. Vision number 9 by Tom King and Gabriel Hernandez-Walta.
Yeah, awesome. Which is easy for me. Belair. It was easy for me to find because this is also my click of the week.
Nice.
Yeah, that's kind of a hard one to go against. I'm slightly torn. Because like I said, Guardians was actually pretty fun this week, but you know what? I'm gonna go with you guys on this one with Vision number 9, because yeah, that book was and is always a pretty stellar book.
Right, and you can sense that it's ramping up, and it's, you know, and it's establishing the end of the story. So it's, you know, it's really good. It's a great setup.
So what did Tim incorrectly choose? It's his cookie.
He chose Nightwing Rebirth number 1.
Sorry, Tim. Now's a good time for you to jump on the show. Do it now.
I know he's watching. You just said he was watching. Well, he's kind of alluded to he's watching, so I know he's around.
Jump on the show now. Defend your pick. All right. In the meantime, I'm going to do a quick ad read, and then we'll jump into the news that we do have to kind of cover quickly because it's getting late. Mm-hmm. So let me tell you about Skullcandy. Skullcandy makes the best headphones, earbuds, and gaming headsets, all with lifetime warranties. Skullcandy produces many types of audio accessories across the audio spectrum. And now, for the listeners of the Click Nation's Comic Book Chronicles, Skullcandy offers free standard shipping on your order. To help keep our podcast free, order from Skullcandy by going to cspn.us, that's cspn.us, then clicking on the Keep Our Podcasts Free link. Click on the Skullcandy banner, and then shop for high-quality audio accessories with free standard shipping. Skullcandy Audio through cspn.us. Do it today.
All right, so now we're going to breeze through the cinematic news because there's really not that much, so we can get to the comic news, which actually turns out to be just a bit, as we have alluded to earlier. So, the Flash movie is eyeing these three actresses as female leads for Iris West. Wait, let me see what the names who they have here. Did I put them in the article? I probably didn't. Either way,
Kiersey there's a Clemens, couple. Of, oh, no, wait, that's yeah. The... Yeah, Kiersey Clemens.
No, you're right.
Kiersey Clemens, Rita Ora, and Lucy Boynton are also in the mix, are all in the mix to play Iris West.
And the Clemens person that you mentioned sound like she may be the front runner as of recent events, but they're still hashing it out, sounds like.
Okay.
Gotham. Season 3, first look teases somebody's big interest. So,
okay.
I don't know if this was as much of an article as it is made out to be, because if you have seen the season finale of the show, you know who it is, and it wasn't like it's a big interest, because actually that's when her big interest kind of was, between the last couple of episodes of the show. I don't know too many people that are reading interest, but spoiler alert, Fish Mooney's come back on the show, which she's already made an appearance a couple of times or throughout the last half of the season. So, and the last we saw her was, you know, she had hijacked a bus and I think ran into Penguin, not literally, but ran into Penguin and was kind of rolling out into Gotham. So she will be, and she's also picked up some powers during the course of the season, or in her return, I should say.
Okay.
It was right. That. Wonder Woman plot, synopsis, and screenwriter credits revealed.
Yay. Okay.
Yeah, apparently Geoff Johns got something to do with it and a couple other people and whatever. So, okay.
Okay. So, let's see here. Just very quickly, Marvel and Fox team for an X-Men TV series from the creator of Burn Notice.
Yeah. And sounds like Hellfire is no longer a show. I mean, not Hellfire.
Legion.
No. Legion's still a show. Hellfire is no longer a show.
Oh, okay. Hellfire is no longer a show. Sorry. Okay. There's a report that Legendary Pictures is nearing a deal for a Pokemon live-action movie.
Thanks, Pokemon Go.
There you go. I'm level 6 only.
Yeah, I think I just hit 4.
And what's funny is...
I was playing with my son. I just hit level 4, and I was like, hey, buddy, I'm level 4. And he's like, psh, I'm 9.
Nice! Good job, kiddo!
I think the girl at my comic chapter, and she's like 25 or something like that. I'm like, wait, that's ridiculous. I can't remember. Yeah.
I'll tell you something very quickly about this. Very funny. You're supposed to get a lot of exercise playing this game. You're supposed to walk around looking for it.
Mm-hmm.
My office, sitting on the fourth floor in a mid-sized building in Manhattan. I haven't had to leave my office. I think I've caught an average of 4 Pokemon a day sitting at my desk.
And I would imagine you have a lot of landmines. Being in New York, you have a lot of landmarks around you.
Yeah, exactly. And there's people throwing out lures like right outside the office. So I think I'm catching Pokemon.
Is there a Pokestop near your office, like a Starbucks?
There's a Pokestop around the corner from my house and a gym up the block.
Yeah,
at a traffic circle. So, but by my office in Tribeca, Manhattan, there's a lot of stuff nearby.
Yeah, I could see you having there's a lot of places for you to get stuff there. So,
right.
But in that case, Simon Pegg had the canonical explanation of why Sulu is gay in the new Star Trek universe. The short story is...
I was going to say, can we not spoil it?
I don't think it's going to come... It's not going to come out during the course of the movie, I don't think. Because basically all he said was, hey, because the timeline split, none of this stuff, they're free to do whatever they... You know, everything's different.
Right.
So they basically rebooted. It's basically a reboot. So everything that has happened before is whatever. This is a whole new universe. This is a whole new thing, and anything could happen.
Sure.
True story.
Okay. Let's see. So Matt Damon says he would play a superhero, but only for Ben Affleck. Aww.
You mean outside of the bedroom?
Aww.
It's always the truth that's the funniest.
Right? You know.
Oh, boy.
All right, and last of the cinematic news is Legends of Tomorrow season premiere title is revealed, and I believe it is called Out of Time. It was basically Katie Laws, Lots, I guess is her name, excuse me, and showed a picture of her script, or the first page of the script, and yes, it is called Out of Time.
All right.
Looking forward to it.
So let's get to the comic news. All right. Triple H drops the hammer in new WWE cover from Boom Studios. Okay. So apparently Boom Studios has acquired the WWE publishing license, and they'll publish comic books based on the current wrestlers. Oh, no.
I mean, you know... They did a WWE series, 2 years ago from, was it Paper Cuts? Was something that the company? Like that. Or was it from Titan? Yeah. I don't remember.
Was that even a year ago? 2 years ago? I thought it was like last year or something.
I don't know. But
it just kind of came and went.
The only reason to ever buy it was because of the variant covers that they would do. You know, Hulk Hogan in the NWO black suit as the black suit Spider-Man, you know, from Secret Wars.
Right, I think I bought that.
I did buy that. And that's only because they would do those variant covers. That was the only reason to ever buy it. But I don't know, man. I mean, Boom Studios is a bigger company, so maybe they actually have someone more creative working on it. I don't know, but that's still a tough sell.
All right. So let's skip over this next one because it ties into the Marvel Now announcement.
Okay, sure.
Gendy Tartakovsky. Oh, no, that's another one.
No, that's different. Well, yeah, because this whole block is going to... Well, this next block after this, the next story after, is going to be all similar.
Right, so, He-Man meets the Thundercats, and October is appropriately named He-Man / Thundercats. Ha, ha, ha! All right, so that's a cool crossover. Comixology introduces creator trading cards for San Diego Comic-Con 2016. I thought that was kind of cool. I saw those
examples.
Exactly. Okay, here's what the full Marvel Now. Okay, so now we can get into Marvel Now.
IGN was nice enough to put together a full list of the new books that were announced in the free previews that came out this past Wednesday.
Right, which, before you get to that, yeah, so there was a leak Monday from Lunzerama saying that, hey, this is a leaked thing from, oh, why did I put that in my thing? Oh, that's right. So they leaked it, and then Marvel decided to just come out with the previews of the book. And if you go to Comixology right now, actually, or I think your store is supposed to be selling it, but if you go to Comixology right now, you can also pick up the previews books, which all the stuff we're about to talk about is going to be in.
Right. So without, I mean, some of this stuff does kind of contain spoiler-ish information, but since it's since it was released on Wednesday, these are the new / relaunch series. I'll just read through this very quickly, but still enunciate. Amazing Spider-Man, Renew Your Vows, number 1. Avengers, number 1. Avengers, number 1.1. Bullseye, number 1. Cage, number 1. That's the Genndy Tartakovsky book. Captain Marvel, number 1. Champions, number 1, which we've spoken about. The Clone Conspiracy. Oy. Death of X, number 1. Doctor Strange, Sorcerer Supreme, number 1. Fool Killer, number 1. Gamora, number 1. Great Lakes Avengers, number 1. Hawkeye, number 1. The Infamous Iron Man, number 1. And the Invincible Iron Man, number 1. Iron Fists, plural, number 1.
Now, I'm kind of interested about that one, because this takes up after Kerry Andrews, who's also writing this, takes up after Kerry Andrews' run on Iron Fist, the Living Weapon, and right. So, which means, you know, the young monk that sets up with him,
sure,
is going to be his partner. Yeah,
that'll be cool. Mm-hmm. Especially it gives him more room to expand, because he does have his own team up book. Mm-hmm. So Jessica Jones, number 1, if I hadn't say that already. Kingpin, number 1. Mosaic, number 1. Nova, number 1. Occupy, now, Avengers, number 1.
Go ahead. Now, some of the stuff he's reading off has been announced already, so some of this really didn't have to be.
But it's kind of nice as a summary, a reminder, because you also have to understand how many books are being relaunched, and that's sort of the effect that I wanted to convey. Right. Prowler, number 1. Rocket Raccoon, number 1. Slapstick, number 1. Solo, number 1. Star-Lord, number 1. Thanos, number 1. U.S. Avengers, number 1. The Ultimate Squared, number 1. The Unstoppable Wasp, number 1. The Unworthy Thor, number 1, which is probably one of the only books I'm going to get here. And Venom, number 1. The reason why The Unworthy Thor, number 1, is going to be a big deal is because it's Jason Aaron still writing for, and Olivier Coipel on art, and this is going to follow the story of the Odin son, who has recently been deemed unworthy of Mjolnir, but spoiler alert, maybe picking up the ultimate Thor hammer that was last seen at the end of Secret Wars.
Mm-hmm.
I won't go into the continuing series, but there is a decent number of books that are continuing on.
Did you say Death of X went number 1? Because that was
I did. Well, listen, if you hadn't noticed by now, there is a real dearth of X-Books, because there are no X-Books other than what you could sort of call a pseudo-X-Book in Uncanny Avengers. There are no X-Books listed in terms of the returning books.
Although, Dan Slaughter, someone said, there's probably going to be one or two. I don't know how true that, or I saw that somewhere. I don't know. It might not have been him, so I don't want to put words in his tweets, but whatever. Sure. So we will definitely see the fate of, sounds like, of Cyclops and maybe of the X part of the universe. We shall see, though.
Absolutely. All righty.
Wasn't there a book announced that had the young Cyclops from
Champions?
He's in
Champions.
But that's not all mutants.
No,
nope.
Because that has Ms. Marvel and Miles Morales and Totally Awesome Hulk.
Yeah, and the character that we haven't mentioned.
Correct.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
So yeah, and there are, like I just said, there are some books that, well, I don't know if you did say it, but there are some books that are also keeping their numbering in as this goes on. So that's right. At least good.
There's a good number of books.
Yeah, and there's some
books that are continuing. Yeah,
right. That's good, because I this whole renumbering thing, just to continue the whole storyline thing, is really crazy. Now, someone said that the Ultimates was canceled, but they relaunched it as rebooting it as another, which I thought was kind of strange. But I mean, even though that's technically what's going on, but it wasn't necessarily canceled. They're just doing a renumbering like they're doing now. And the Ultimates numbering of this sounds like what they did with the Ultimate Universe anyway, you know. So, but I thought that was kind of strange that somebody that they said that. But it kind of is kind of tomato tomato at this point, I guess.
Sure. So that's that. Are there any of these stories that we need to touch upon for Marvel now that aren't sort of covered by just noting that they're
being relaunched.
I mean, there was Infamous Iron Man, just like, okay, we're going to get a basically another superior Iron Man, which I think we actually alluded to last week. So it's going to be Doctor Doom. Mm-hmm. That's not a spoiler. It's been out there for a minute.
Right.
And then, like, you kind of went past Riri Williams. We know that's going to be the other Iron Man, and we got a shot of what her armor is going to look like, which looks like Tony's kind of. But I don't know of anything. Is anything, like, you, anybody else for you? Excited about any books that are coming along in this?
The Iron Fists and the Odin, the Unworthy Thor. Those are the ones that I'm really kind of looking forward to.
Yeah.
Everything else I'll try. All right. Anything else with Marvel now?
Yeah. I mean, the Doctor Strange ones, like, you know, that could be something, I guess. Like, Wasp getting her own book. And
I was going to say Doctor Strange. It's funny that they want to launch a second Doctor Strange book in advance of the movie.
Mm. Yeah. But yeah. But outside of that, I don't know. Kingpin's getting a book, so I don't know. That could be something. The Hawkeye's got a book, and it's not going to be Clint, because as we've said earlier, I think he's got other fish to fry.
Well, I think he's going to be the lead in the Occupy book.
That is actually also true. Also, yes.
Really. So, you know, I didn't want to dive headlong into this. It's a lot, and I think it's
really that was probably the only other thing I wanted to bring
up. It's worth it for all our listeners and viewers of the Comic Book Chronicles to actually go take a look at the previews and all the stuff that's available online, because, you know, it'll help you make your buying decisions. I wanted to just go through, and I thought the most important part of this announcement is the sheer volume of material that's out there and the choices that you're going to have to make with your money when these books are announced. It's going to be a softer rollout than a new 52, you know, like 52 books all at once. But, you know, it's still a lot of books to take a look at and determine whether or not you want to pay for them. So, you know, get ready to make some difficult choices, probably.
Hey, remember when that event that kind of got pushed into Marvel Now initially? That kind of was that kind of pushed some books out of the way, but they still ended up kind of rolling some books in. I can't remember what event that was now that I think about it.
Yeah, right?
It was only last year, 2 years ago, but then it was like, yeah, it was like, anyway, it doesn't matter. That was like, that was ridiculous. It was crazy. And now we're back to a Marvel Now.
Marvel Now!
Yeah.
All right.
But anyway, let's move on.
I honestly, looking through that list of books, I honestly don't know. I might try Champions just because.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But looking at that list of books, I can't think of a single one that makes me go, oh, I must read that.
The Unworthy Thor. You got to go with Jason Aaron. Only because it's the next chapter in that story. That's why I'm enthusiastic about that.
There's a few that doesn't seem like that doesn't seem necessary, and also throwback to the 90s, which is really, really weird.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know that they hit rock bottom when you see a Thunderstrike now.
Yeah, I'm like, seriously, Fool Killer number one? Really? We needed a book?
Yeah, really. All right. So I was about to say, I showed a whole stack. I'm not going to put that up because I'm going through this. Just where I, speaking of 90s, I a stack of books that I showed earlier. Right here, I found a couple of 90s throwbacks. So it was like Star Blast number like 1, 2 or something, like 2 or 3 or 4. And that was like, it was just a weird hodgepodge of, and a Cage book that I tweeted out earlier. I'm like, okay, yeah, they're really bringing back some 90s in a couple of these things. So anyway, let us keep going with.
I was gonna say, any other news stories that really need to be touched on?
Oh, there we go. Is Dirk show something, Dirk?
These are the Punisher books that we talked about a couple weeks ago.
Oh yeah,
I actually had just bought these when we talked about them on the show, and I just remembered to grab them. This is where Punisher gets injected with some pigment and is hanging out in Chicago with Luke Cage, taking on the street thugs.
Ah,
and Marvel, for some reason, refuses to release these digitally. I don't know why.
I wonder why.
Yeah, see, here's the Cage issue that I ended up finding.
That's fun.
So, all right, let's go.
Yeah, let's roll. Any of these other news stories?
Yeah. Well, let's see. There's going to be a new character involved, which that comes out of that. So we touched on that. There's Disneyland debuts a new look for a Star Wars themed land.
Okay.
So I think there was a kind of picture going around of what's going to be there. You know, so it seems like some cool stuff, but they're still going to go through that. Let's see. Oh. Diodato apologizes for using a fan redesign for a Marvel Now image. So
that's
Marvel
Google now biting him in the butt. That's
Google, man.
What he said. Yeah. So basically, what happens in that in the Marvel Now issue, in the Marvel Now image that has like Doctor Doom and everybody else that was pictured around them, there was a redesign of Kate Bishop's Hawkeye costume. that apparently is a that was fan done, and Deodato picked it up and used it in that picture. Oops. And I find it kind of interesting that even in the article that I have in this thing, it's like the Marvel Now picture is like this big, and then the picture that they used for the actual character from the person that they got it from was like this and was a small credit on it, but at least they did give him credit. So I was like, well, okay, sure. That's the one way to do it.
Yep.
But that was a big oopsie on Deodato's part.
Yep, pretty much. So there's Twice the Kurt with Big Trouble in Little China and Escape from New York crossing over. That's a crossover book written by Greg Pak. And is that art by Daniel Bayless?
Yes.
Yes.
So that's an interesting crossover of some 80s properties.
Well, no, I started reading that Big Trouble in Little China. I think I went like 5 issues and then I didn't drop it because it was bad. It just was like there was other stuff going on. So I was still buying it. So there's also going to be apparently, because there was another announcement around this, that there was going to be an art book for, or there was going to be a matching of the Big Trouble in Little China book. Okay. And also an art of that same book that will be out in August and November consecutively.
All right. So Melissa Benoist Supergirl lands her own action figure.
Yes, apparently DC's going into the Build-A-Figure things because apparently this figure that she has a leg with it that is Doomsday.
Oh, so, I mean, yeah.
So this is part of a wave.
Yeah, DC's jumped on that bandwagon.
Mm-hmm. So, hey, go for it, folks.
All right, so let's see here.
Just a list real quick. Meet Kwesi Africa's cartoon heroes. So there was a story on BBC Africa about a cartoon from a South African artist that named, the cartoon's name is Kwesi, and there's a video on the site. I'll have to put this up somewhere about that. And he was talking about, you know, his inspiration for doing it and why he felt that it needed to happen because, you know, Africa doesn't really have any superheroes, so he wanted to make sure that there was one, at least one.
All right. Okay. Lion Forge Super Team assembled for 2016 San Diego Comic-Con. So I guess they have put together a bunch of talent acquisitions or management acquisitions?
So this is management acquisitions. Oh, okay. So we have Jeff Dorber as president, Rich Johnson, not that Rich Johnson,
right.
VP of sales, Sydney Barwick, and a lot of these people have been around the industry a good while, so there are some actual names, including Joseph P. Illich, whom you may know as was the editor for Milestone back in the day. He also has a article that he puts out, column every he puts out every week called The Mission, you know, which is actually in the show notes that we put. So here's the talent lined up, and they're going to be at SDCC, it sounds like, cool. Doing a panel. And as we've talked about before, one of Land Forge is the book that has Voltron.
Right, okay.
So, and it sounds like they're setting up some stuff for the future.
All right. DC announces the Vigilante Southland book with a brand new hero under the Vigilante mask. The Vigilante character was originally introduced in the pages of New Teen Titans. And now they have reinvented the character to be in a much more modern setting,
mm-hmm.
And a much more socially and politically relevant setting.
Yes, and apparently the writer of this was a mystery writer and named Gary Phillips, and the artist is Elena Casagrande.
All right,
covered by Julia Briscoe.
Cool. Dark Horse Comics announces Spell on Wheels from Kate Leth and Megan Levins.
Yep.
Dead Man, Dark Mansion of Forbidden Love tells gothic romance tale in prestige format from DC Comics. Batman and Superman defeat Doomsday with candy. I think I saw a screenshot of this.
I was going to ask Carl about this.
All right.
Go ahead.
Right. So if you actually pick up the print DC books, unfortunately, none of these seem to be in the digital copies. They were only in print. But basically, you see Superman and Batman facing off against Doomsday, and they shove a Snickers in Doomsday's face. And
you're not you when you're hungry.
Yeah, and that's exactly what it is. It turns out it's Wonder Woman.
Did not do that.
Yes,
and
they
then
did.
The funny thing is, it's four pages. Each page is a full page. The final page is your basic standard Snickers ad where you see the candy bar, you know, kind of cut in half, so you see the peanuts and the nougat in the middle and everything. But they took that regular print ad and they had someone draw the print ad. So all four pages of this ad are illustrated. So Snickers actually bought four full pages and commissioned DC to have someone do the artwork to draw the characters and to draw their ad. So you have four full pages of artwork for the Snickers ad.
My goodness.
And Wonder Woman? The artwork is awesome. I mean, the artwork does look great in the middle of it.
God.
Beautiful looking ad piece, but it is the weirdest thing
to
see it in the middle of the book. But, I mean, it looks great. It looks great.
Now, I guess there was some saying that, hey, if you've read the book through, it's almost kind of indistinguishable of where the ad starts and, you know, where the book starts and the ad.
It's in the middle, and it's buffered by a couple pages of DC Rebirth. Like, there's an interview. It's like the house ads that they always have. Okay. Where it shows, like, the Wonder Woman ad where, like, someone's at the bus stop or whatever, and there's a giant Wonder Woman projected, and it's, like, heroes now more than ever. And then you've got an interview with, I think, Greg Rucka. There's, like, a full-page interview of them going back and forth. Just the standard, like, Johnny DC stand soapbox, you know, that type of stuff that they always put in the middle of comics. And so you've got a couple pages of that stuff, and then you've got these four pages. And then I think there's another DC Rebirth house ad on the end. So it's this chunk right in the middle that's all ads and promotional stuff for DC. But in the middle of all this promotional stuff, you have the four-page Snickers, you know, artwork in the middle.
Okay, so it doesn't blend in that close like you were saying.
No. Okay. I mean, if you were reading Justice League, maybe you'd be a little confused suddenly, but, you know, you're reading Nightwing, and in the middle of Nightwing, here's Batman and Superman facing off Doomsday. You're kind of like, okay, I'm in an ad now.
Sure.
You know, it's a little more obvious, you know.
All right.
But I don't know who the artist is that did them. They don't list it? Credited. I don't think they're credited on there. So, in fact, it may be an artist from whatever ad agency, you know, Hershey's Incorporated uses. I don't know. Or Mars, you know, whoever owns the Snickers brand. But yeah, I mean, it looks good. The artwork is really good.
Does.
And I was surprised that they redrew the regular magazine ad in the comic book style. That was a nice touch.
Wow. Yeah,
it works out. So.
I'm going to have to track that down, or at least take a look at it online, because I'm intrigued now.
But, I mean, if that keeps cover prices at $2.99, put a four-page Snicker ad in every book. I don't care.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, that's true. So our last piece of news here tonight is a new book. Hawkman and Adam Strange is a intergalactic team-up.
Intergalactic planetary.
So, yes, they've been absent since Rebirth. I don't know if anybody's been actually looking for them, but, hey, great. I don't see if it says who the – we got a press release from it that doesn't necessarily say who's doing it, but we could also get a cover shot, and there you go. It'll be out in October.
Cool.
All right. I'm sorry. Mark Andrico is going to be the writer, and artist is Aaron Lopresti.
Okay. Cool. Lopresti's a good artist.
Okay.
And Andrico's done some pretty good work.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you have an unboxing?
I do not, no.
Okay. Dirt, do you have anything else to add before we wrap?
No, I'm good.
I just wanted to, I know I tweeted this out. I think I Instagrammed this out too. I did pick up the Walgreens exclusive Namor Marvel Legends.
Oh.
So it's pretty cool. See if you can dig it up in your local Walgreens or Duane Reade. They are owned by the same parent company.
Yeah,
Walgreens.
Speaking of which, sounds like we may be seeing Fishhead again.
Oh, yes. That has been teased in Squadron Supreme.
Mm-hmm.
So, all righty. So, I guess, you know, we'd like to thank everyone for tuning in to this week's Comic Book Chronicles. How does Tim normally rap? I always forget. I'm always queuing up the sounds.
So basically, it goes a little something like this. You can find us at our individual accounts. I am at Radicat and at News Nerds Need. Dirt is at PCN_Dirt and at Pop Culture Network, and find his vines out there on the Vinage under his names. Agent 70 is at Agent 70.
Agent_70.
Never forget, that is important.
Yes.
And also on Instagram, where he's you know,
posting latest toy finds.
Uh-huh. Draped in comic books as he does his great Instagram honey thing. Anyway,
yep.
But you can find this show right here on theclicknation.com every Thursday nights at 9 o'clock or sometime near that when we get our acts together.
That's right.
You can also find us on cspn.us. Also, podcast. You can find us on iTunes and Stitcher and all other places podcastery, as I have said before. And with that,
I think we can sign off now.
I think we can go ahead and end this because there's nothing else to do. So with that, we are the Comic Book Chronicles, and we are out.
We are
signing off. It's Dr. Doom.